Hey,
how are you, man?
I'm good. How have you been?
Fantastic. How are you?
Tired, but I'm doing okay.
Good. So, there's all sorts of exciting things to talk about, but how's the wife? How's she feeling?
She's feeling, stuck, I guess is a good word for it. Because she still can't bend her knee, so she's stuck with the full locked shenanigans. Cast. Yeah, she just can't do anything. So she's hopefully getting her slightly adjustable brace on Friday of next week, which means that she'll be able to move it like, you know, 10 degrees, 20 degrees or whatever. And then they'll crank it a little bit more and crank it a little bit more. So I think every 2 weeks, I think she gets another, you know, a little bit of extra. But then she starts physical therapy and it's just been a rough month for her. I mean, it's been a rough month for everybody, but I can't imagine not being able to do, you know,
much life. Of anything.
Yeah, life, really. It sucks. Oh, man. Yeah, it's the worst.
Well, I hope that healing goes relatively quick for her.
Yeah, it'll take some time. I mean, we're getting older, and breaking something takes, you know, twice as long as it should, but she's getting through. At least the pain is manageable now. There are days that are really bad. But and it's there's no reason why they're bad, but as you know, most days are that she's absolutely fine. She's able to get through, able to, you know, walk around, but she can't drive. That's the biggest thing. Like, she can't drive and she can't handle the dogs. Like, they just pull too hard on her. So if she's you know, bringing them downstairs or something like that, if they dart to chase a cat or something, she's like, she could get really hurt. So she can't, we can't risk that. And then she can't drive because she can't bend her knee. So, it's got to be frustrating.
Just a matter of time.
Yeah, give it another couple of weeks, and she'll be able to move it a little bit. She and my daughter are taking a trip out to the beach. She had actually planned on a beach trip the weekend after she got injured. So this was like her, you know, once a year I get away from reality for a little bit and spend a weekend out in a condo that, you know, we rent. And it's just her, and it's just like, I just needed a recharge weekend. And we're like, that's absolutely cool, but she wasn't able to do it. And this was, what, beginning of February that she got hurt? So definitely not peak season. It's not the beach like she needs to go swimming. It's the beach that she needs the end of the continent. You know, you look out and you just see. I mean, I don't have to tell you, but you just look out and you're just like, there's nothing out there. And it's like, this is good. Like, I could chill. I could just drink my coffee and look out into nowhere. And that's a really, you know, for her, it's a very therapeutic experience. And she hasn't been able to do that. So it's like, next weekend, she's able to do that. My daughter, my oldest daughter, has her learner's permit. So she's going to be driving her out.
Where does the time go?
Scary, dude. It's so scary. Yeah, she turned 16 in July. So she's been driving. We've been driving every weekend. She was driving to school, but, you know, when my wife got hurt, she stopped driving to school because I then have to drive my other daughter to school, which is like a 25-minute drive from our house, and then 25 minutes back, and then it's like just too much.
Yeah.
And it's long traffic, more like rush hour sort of driving. At least the drive to school is relatively straight. So she, you know, she can get used to it, but yeah, it's going to be a long drive for her. We're going to go try to, freeway driving. She hasn't really driven on the freeway much. She did during driver's ed, but you know, we never do it during normal days. So she's going to go drive freeway on, with me on Sunday and then, drive all the way to the beach, which is like 2.5 hours, I guess, 3 hours. She's going to, Topsail, which is like just south Outer Banks area.
Okay.
Which is really, really beautiful. And again, it's like, I mean, it's like nature just did its thing. You know, there's houses out there, but there's so many dunes and little growing like areas. It's a really beautiful area, especially one that, you know, if you need to recharge, you know, there's nothing really to do. That's what's so nice about it. You just go there and you can forget about life for a little bit.
That's awesome.
Yeah. How's the new job?
It's... It's a change of pace, that's for sure. So when you talk about the military and the government, the phrase "hurry up and wait" comes up a lot.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of my job.
Yeah,
is hurrying up and waiting for stuff to break.
Yeah.
But I mean, I do like it a lot. So the guy that I'm working with, fills his day with things. So if someone breaks something in, like, for example, we have a big, industrial sized shredder, paper shredder.
Okay.
That, like, you could literally feed this thing for 8 hours a day and it'd be fine. So someone was taking the little shredding pieces out to throw them in the trash because, you know, HIPAA laws and everything like that. We can't recycle it because right. it's colored paper, so it's got to go in the trash.
Right.
So, you know, shreds down to tiny little pieces, goes in the trash, and he's wheeling out the whole canister that has a bag in it, and then the wheels that are only meant to go on linoleum or hardwood mm-hmm. catch on a crack in the old concrete, break two wheels off of it. Crack another, you know, support on the other side. So we spent probably 45 minutes fixing that today. And there's a couple other things, like just do basic rounds, make sure stuff's working, nothing's leaking, stuff like that. So it's fun. I do enjoy it. You know, just waiting to get, you know, all my full computer access and everything, which hopefully should be next week. And all in all, it's fun. I'm enjoying it quite a lot.
That's awesome. So it's been 3 weeks now? A month?
Yeah, this is the end of my third week.
End of the third week. Awesome. Yeah, that's great. I mean, it must be such a change from what you were doing before. Especially, like, schedule-wise. Are you up crazy early still, or is that normal hours?
Sort of. So, like, I'm working 7 to 3:30, you know.
Okay.
By choice.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They'll give me the option of working basically whatever schedule I need. So if I need to change to 9 to 5:30, they'll let me do that. Or if I need to do 4:10s, they'll let me do that.
That's awesome.
So it's nice to have that flexibility because basically everyone that I work for all the way up the chain of command has a family.
Right.
So they know, like, hey, things happen and, you know, we're still going to get work out of you. So we're willing to be flexible, which is really nice to have.
Yeah.
But so the guy that owned the company that I left, where I was doing all my welding work said, hey, I have a ton of welding work. Are you willing to come in on the weekends? Yeah, I'm definitely willing to. So he gave me a nice little pay bump for coming in, you know, between 5 and 8 hours Saturdays, which is nice.
Yeah.
I did it for 3 hours last weekend and then I got the pay for that. And I'm like, why the fuck did I spend 3 hours there for $84? This is stupid.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, that's the question, right?
Yeah. As I'm doing the 8 hours. Yeah. So doing anything 6 to 8 hours, I think it'd be worth it. So,
yeah,
you know, just to have a little bit extra money until that job's done. But
yeah,
so like part of me wanted to tell him to kick rocks, but I was like,
right.
I mean, I'll still get to weld a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And it'll be ideally what I want. Walk in, weld all day, leave.
Right. Yeah.
Not have to deal with manifolds and grinding shit.
Nope. And none of the bureaucracy, you know what you're there for. There's
exactly.
No elbowing your way up the corporate ladder or anything like that. You don't have to deal with HR. It's like, we need you for this job, and this is how long this job is going to be. And you just come in, and you do it, and you get out. I love that. Yep. I mean, that's a really good use of time.
I'm very excited about it, yeah. So yeah, I mean, all in all, I feel much happier. It's much better. Like, it's nice to be around, you know, Coast Guard folk again, honestly. And I'm very proud to be working there again. I'm just super happy about it. Like, so one of the things that people would say to kind of make fun of, like, the new guys, you know, they'd say they bleed blue, you know, company men essentially. And I'm realizing over the last few years that I very much turned into a company man.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, like, I also feel like, you know, it's an honorable thing to work for the Coast Guard, not just to be in the Coast Guard. So I'm very excited about it and I enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, even so, if I was at my old job sitting around as much as I have been for these last couple of weeks,
right,
I'd be mad. I'd be like, I need to find something to do.
Right. You know? Right.
But instead I'm just like, I'm here. So when they need help, they can come to me and say, hey, I need help. So I have that attitude about it and I'm excited about it.
It took me a while to get to that point where I was confident enough in my position, I guess, in the company, where if I weren't busy, I didn't feel bad, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's definitely something to be said about staying busy, but it's not like you're getting paid to work all the time. You're getting paid to work when they need you to work.
Yeah.
You know? And it's worth it for them to have you sit around just so that they can ask you to do work when they have work, versus, mm-hmm. you know, bringing you in or bringing somebody else in on a part-time basis whenever they have work. You know what I mean? Like, it's Absolutely. A different mentality. And it took a while for me to get around to that. There's definitely downtime, you know, with any job. But it sounds like, you know, you're kind of getting into that at the time when you're there. I mean, it's probably, is it a new role as well within the organization, or are you backfilling somebody who was there?
Yeah. So I've got a story about that one too. Mm-hmm. So the guy that I'm replacing retired. He'd been doing this job for, I think it was 16 or 17 years.
Nice.
And the job has changed a lot. So as hardware changes over the years,
for sure,
you know, technicians don't go down to the component level and desolder capacitors and redo mm-hmm. it and everything like that. So since that's not a thing anymore,
yeah.
you know, we do more of, you know, like return orders back to manufacturers and stuff like that. So as far as components are concerned, we still do that, mm-hmm. you know, O-rings and everything like that. We change that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. You know, fix general things around the clinic and stuff like that. But I replaced him, and so there's two of my position in the Coast Guard. And I realized that because as I was cleaning up my desk, mm-hmm. I found, I don't know how many travel orders that of this guy going all over the United States, down to Puerto Rico. I think he went to like upstate, to San Diego, to Alameda, mm-hmm. all over the place, to all these different clinics where they don't have repair techs like we are. And I'm realizing that, you know, we are, you know, two of two.
Yeah.
And it's cool at the same time. Like I tend to find myself in these situations where I limit my upward mobility in that specific right. role, but
right.
there's always openings available, you know, yeah. somewhere, somehow. So like the guy that is working with me 5 years ago, he was doing landscaping on base.
No way.
Yeah. So, and he was an aviator. Mm-hmm. He did, aviation, maintenance okay. when he was enlisted, and then he became an officer and started doing other stuff. So he had a ton of different skills that he mm-hmm. was able to bring to the shop, and you know, obviously he had, you know, a personable mentality and stuff like that. So it was nice to have right. that too. And he's a cool guy. So it's nice to be able to work with somebody that's not just like, fucking hate my boss and I hate yeah. this and this sucks and like I'm ready to burn yeah, the building
yeah, yeah.
down.
Yeah.
I mean, some days I was that guy, but
for sure. I got to imagine that for you, it's a huge shift coming from a very like, doesn't mean to sound derogatory, but like a blue collar job, like a trade profession, you know, where
yeah, that's not derogatory at all.
This is what people did. And it's like, I'm a welder, you know, and you work all day with people who are welders or machinists or whatever. And that's what they do. Mm-hmm. And now you're at a point where you're not hired because of what you've done. You're hired because of your potential. Like you're a good, exactly. competent person who they can put into whatever role they need you to do. Like your job is going to change day to day, not just from what am I working on, but like, how am I working? What sort of job am I doing? And they yeah. just need to find competent people. So I have a
For sure.
really good feeling that now that you're in the door, like you said, there might not be upward mobility in this role, but there's plenty of mobility within the organization, right?
Absolutely, yeah. yeah. So like I tried to get a welding job with the Coast Guard four or five different times, but when they were available, I just didn't have the resume.
Right.
So now that I have the resume, the places that I had applied don't have welders anymore. They're now general mechanics.
Oh,
so
there you go.
They're people that turn wrenches and might be able to do some welding.
Sure.
So there's one other shop that's on base that does have welders, and I might try to make a visit over there and see who's about to retire, who might die soon.
Yeah, I mean, get your name out there, get some FaceTime, and I mean, I think that's really smart. Even if it doesn't pan out to anything, at least you are a yeah. name on their list. You know, that's. You know, referrals are always the way that people look to hire, you know, from the beginning, without a doubt.
Absolutely. But yeah, so I am very excited. Cool. And you started a lead job, right?
Yeah. So I'm tech lead now. I was a senior engineer and now I'm a tech lead. So the difference is kind of like a player coach mentality. So mm-hmm. I still write code and do software development, but I'm also more on a roadmap, feature enhancement, prioritization, future thing, hiring people, that sort of thing. So it's been really fun. challenging. You know, it took a bit to shift from, I think the biggest shift for me was measuring, like I usually measure in the amount of like tickets I close or the amount of code that I write or like the things that I deliver. And now it's like, what is my team delivered? And it's mm-hmm. taken a bit of a adjustment, you know, how I grade how good my week was, because I'm not basing it on anything. It's less quantifiable. I can't just say, oh, I closed 6 tickets this week, mm-hmm. you know, and I have a quota or a, you know, if you are running an agile team, which is what we run, and you do like weighing your tickets on a point system to see, you know, how your run rate would be. I don't want to get too crazy into that, but but you have like a number in your head, like, okay, I, you know, did like 10 or something of a week or 20 of a week or whatever. And if you don't have that number, how do you measure how good your week was? And it's yeah. like, well, I don't have to do that anymore, because that's my nice. Yeah, my success is measured by how well the team is doing. So if I can help the team get to that point, whether that's me writing code or me just supporting from code review or me, you know, just running stand-ups in the morning and helping people figure out what they're working on for the day, it's been a really interesting shift. And I think it will be a good shift for the future as well, not from a writing. I still write code. I mean, I'm not going to stop doing that, but writing less code and being more in a management sort of lead position. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. A lot of work, though. I mean, I always talk about how much downtime I have, you know, between writing or working or whatever, and it's not like that right now. You know, I'm really busy, especially since I'm not at the office. I'm at home because mm-hmm. I can't really leave with my wife, you know, injured. So I kind of jump back and forth and try to get things done as much as I can, but there's more meetings, more like calls and talking about, you know, whatever's happening in the future of the business versus just tactical stuff that's happening right now. So it's definitely shifted my schedule around. I'm hoping that I'm able to get back to the warehouse. You know, just it's hard to work in an environment with dogs and cats and chickens and, you know, delivery people and all that. And then your wife needs coffee and she can't get out of bed. Like, it's a difficult place to be, but my team's been super supportive of it. So again, I'm very, very fortunate to be in this position.
That's awesome, man. Congratulations. Yeah. I'm sure that you're going to do really well there.
I'm hoping that I am. First couple of weeks have been pretty positive. So yeah, we'll keep it up and hope I don't burn out. That's always the fear, you know, just, I drive too hard and I take on too many responsibilities and, you know, too many things that I want to do that I don't want to say no to. And it's like, well, I got to actually say no every now and then.
Yeah. It's important to know what's too much. That's definitely for sure.
You get to that point.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been there before.
I think we all have, and I think we all will again. You know, until
oh,
you,
for sure.
until you, you know, until you die, you're not gonna, you're always going to overcommit to things.
For sure. All right. Let's get down to business.
Rollerblading.
Yes.
It's been a good couple of months. Usually the beginning of the year is pretty chill. You know, I was looking back at the old...
It's been some pretty non-chill stuff that happened lately.
Yeah, I look back at the old shows, and, you know, we usually have, you know, lighter topics the last couple of months. This was a pretty good one. I mean, so state of the industry, you know, things are super slow. Like, usually January, February are the slowest times of year. Mm-hmm. If not January, February, it's like September, October. Like, those are the two, like, main months. It starts to ramp up in March. And then, you know, obviously November, December are pretty busy for Christmas. But, you know, aside from summer, it starts ramping up now. Like, March, this is when you start getting orders from shops. This is when people start coming out of the woodwork. I don't know how often you're on Facebook anymore, but you see a lot of people posting saying, hey, I just came back after 20 years. You know, the old, you know, copy and paste that we see every year around this time.
Where are the hammers?
Yeah, where are the hammers? And, you know, my old Fifth Elements broke or whatever, right? And it's like, okay, like, that's cool. Like, the it's funny because they all have spent time crafting this, you know, this message about, oh, I used to be like this, and oh, things have changed. And it's like, yeah, this is exactly what everybody's seen. Yeah. Everybody says it every time. That's the time of year we are in, you know, where people are dusting off the cobwebs, and maybe they stumbled upon some video on YouTube, or maybe they saw something on Instagram that was recommended to them, or, you know, maybe one of their kids got interested in it and they start getting back into blading. And that's the ramp up for spring and summer. It's really, really awesome to see that it's repeated itself. You know, COVID was a bit of an anomaly, but we definitely have a ton of energy going into this season. There's still a lot of product out there, though. So from like an industry perspective, there's, you know, they're still selling shell only of stuff that they never would. They're still kind of pushing out stuff that, you know, there's not a lot of new releases, but there's a lot of like discounts and stuff like that. It's a weird time. You know, there's product that came out in like October of last year, you know, summer of last year, that's still kind of sitting on shelves.
Yeah. The and gray SLs.
yeah. That, and the gray 909s. I see those getting pushed pretty heavy. I mean, all the Rosies, like you still see Nils out there. You see the Bobby skin skates out there a lot.
I think we'll see those for a while.
Yeah.
Sorry, Bobby. It's not a good looking skin.
I hope they don't.
Eye the beholder.
I hope they don't never make another skin like that. You know, I would love for them to bring back the Volo Light carbon style just as a,
that would be nice.
A test, you know, because I feel like that fits a need in the market that we don't have anything currently. Like there are no raised heel carbon skates for aggressive. Mm-hmm. You know, everything that's raised heel or everything that's carbon is flat boot. Yeah. So that could be really interesting and replaceable skin. So I think there were a lot of really interesting things that the Volo Light brought, and they could easily bring that out as a Rossi skate. But
I agree.
There's still a lot out there. They really haven't released anything new. But we've had a few big events, and I think the events have really been, like, the big long stretch that everybody needed after winter to get back into it, to get excited about skating. You know, we had Winter Clash, we had Bitter Cold, and we're coming up in April. We're going to have, you know, Crowder Cup. We're going to have the Spring Cup. And we're going to have the Frankie, I think it's first week of April, I think, Frankie's contest. So it's going to be we're really starting out a solid season right now to kick off summer. I'm optimistic, you know, this year is going to be really big, but it's all relative, you know. It's not going to be COVID big, but I think it's going to be bigger than it was pre-COVID, like 2019. I think it will pick up where 2019 left off. Like if we looked at the 2020, 2021, 2022 is like an anomaly where it was just like this big boom and then bust.
Kind of
and then
it's like,
but if you tracked sales and participation and like content and all that from 2016, 2017, 18, 19, and then skipped and went to 2023, I think you would see a fairly straight line that participation is growing, that we're on a really good path. And then year over year, I think it's going to continue to grow. It's just weird that we've got that 2.5 year jump. Yeah, exactly. That just threw everybody's scale out of proportion.
Yeah. But I mean, at the same time, I think we might still see a bit of a jump for the people that came back and stuck with it. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, people, we've talked about it 100 times, but like people know that it's still fun, you know, and as long as you don't go too crazy too quickly, you can do some relatively challenging and fun things and not hurt yourself too bad.
Yeah. I think the Barbie movie also, does that come out in summer? I think it's summer of this year.
I saw the spy shots, and other than that, it's not really on my radar beyond that.
There is a movie trailer. Have you seen the trailer?
I don't think so.
So it does come out in 2023. The trailer's amazing. It's based on 2001. It's really good. So it's expected July of 2023. It is in post-production now. So yeah, it's going to be really great. And I think the nice thing about that is it kind of brings rollerblading to the norm. like it's a thing that they just go out and do and they're being silly and everything, but they'll see people skating. And we're seeing more and more people just skating. Like, we just see it in, like, normal day-to-day, like social media or videos or anything like that.
Yeah. This trailer is ridiculous.
Isn't it so good?
Like, I just have it on mute.
Yeah.
It's so absurd.
Yeah, it is absolutely absurd. It's going to be so good. And I mean, Margot Robbie's amazing. But yeah. I think she can bring...
She's as talented as she is beautiful.
Yeah. She can bring anybody into the theater. And I think she will. I think this is a silly sort of movie that, you know, if it hits in summer, that everybody's going to want to see. And again, big rollerblading thing. I think that it's going to do a lot for Impala, a lot for the, you know, the entry level, the recreational skates. But... you know, if this is also something that kids can enjoy, I don't know what the rating is. I could imagine it's PG. But if this is something that the kids will enjoy, I mean, they could really... I still see kids in my neighborhood skating. Yeah. And it's like, this could get more people into skating, and you know, depending on how they portray it, of course. I'm excited. I mean, I think it's just going to be the norm now. I think there's just going to be rollerblading just like there's skateboarding and things. You know, it's just going to be another thing that people do. And it wasn't like that in 2018. You know, you see a rollerblading, yeah, it was like, what's that? Yeah. Now it's like,
you guys still exist?
Yeah, precisely. But now it's like, it's familiar. You know, people know what it is. They're used to seeing it at the skate park. They're used to seeing it in their neighborhood. Their kids have it, or one of their neighbor kids have it. It's, I mean, again, slow rise. You know, forget about the boom. Slow rise. We're still kicking ass compared to, you know, 2018, 2017, 2016.
For sure. Sure. So yeah, so Winter Clash just happened. Well, do you want to talk about Winter Clash first, or do you want to talk about Bitter Cold?
Let's do Winter Clash. Let's do it in okay. order. That's easier.
Okay. So Winter Clash just happened, and I haven't seen a lot of edits. Like, I feel like there's less edits nowadays, but you see more stuff on Instagram and stories and everything like that. And a lot of the stuff that I saw was really awesome. John was there, right? John Fromm?
Yes, John was there. Yeah. They were at the Adapt booth. I think he competed, too.
I think so. I do remember seeing a couple of clips of him, and, you know, they're Fromm clips, so they were great. His frame promo, fantastic. I told him the second that I saw it, it was amazing.
Yeah.
It was great. Where did he learn to do all those negatives? I don't remember seeing him do a lot of negatives.
No, that's weird, right? So it was his skate promo. But you can see his frame pretty clear and his wheels pretty clear. So, yeah, John, one of the announcements coming out of Winter Clash, Adapt released a few new skates. One of them was a Brutale for John Fromm. It is a white Brutale. It looks really great. You know, just imagine big white splashes of you know, the new buck with a little bit of black around it. Black frames, black wheels, really, really good look. But he did a really good promo edit that our friend Travis Stewart did. So he did the filming and the edit for it, which is killer. I didn't know he was an editor. I thought he was just, you know, a dude that likes to skate and, you know, did a lot of writing and stuff like that. But yeah, it's pretty great. Negatives. I don't really know. I know he's been doing negatives fairly often. I mean, with Adapts, it's kind of hard not to, because the sole plate is the same width on the negative as it is on the sole area. Yeah. So, you know, you've got that much space.
You may as well use it.
Yeah, exactly. To give it a ride. But yeah, I don't know. That was, what was it, an alley-oop negative acid? Ender?
Well, he did a few. So he did have the negative acid. He had a negative Macchio in it. I'm pretty sure he had a regular negative acid as well. I don't know. All I could ever do with negatives was negative mistrial and alley-oop negative mistrial. Even then, it wasn't terribly consistent, and it definitely wasn't anything that, like, John was doing. But yeah, like, I still don't understand. Like, and you did one
Shadow
edit.
Yeah, no, not really.
It was locked and you slid.
I locked it and I slid it. Negatives are a trick that I just don't know that I understand. You know, trying to learn soul grinds.
You don't have to understand them. You just have to do them.
Well, but there's a trick to the balance, I think. And I
agreed,
can't.
Agreed, 100%.
I can't get it.
Fish brains and negative machios, I'll never understand to save my life.
Yeah.
Don't understand it. I've done Elliot fish brains moderately consistently, and I can do machios just fine. I used to be able to backslide anything you'd put in front of me, but I can't figure out fish brains, can't figure out negative machios.
Yeah.
Don't understand it. Probably never will.
It's
front torques, obviously, I can't do those either.
some tricks are easier than others. For me, negatives have never been a thing that I practiced, and I think that's the key. You know, you've got to get that balance. Just like when you're learning soul tricks, you got to get that balance so that you know that you're over the object. And getting over the object when your knee doesn't really bend that way is a weird thing. It's probably easier with big soul plates like a shadow, which is how I was able to do it, or like, you know, an adapt, which is why John is doing them so often. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Farmer's doing them on sways, which doesn't have the biggest negative. It's fine, but, you know, it's not the biggest negative.
It's, yeah, but yeah. Farmer's got those 10,000 hours on him.
yeah, exactly. It's just a different way of doing soul tricks. I'm not a big fan, but I was also shocked when I saw so many negatives coming from John, because I didn't know that he had them in the bag. And apparently,
same.
That ender was Travis seeing him play around with that trick, the negative alley-oop acid. And he was like, hey, why don't you try that on this? And it's like, okay. And, you know, it took him a couple tries. I think the first try he hurt his heels, and then the second try he hurt himself again. I mean, it's a pretty big drop. But he landed it, and it's like, all right, there's your enter. Some crazy trick. I don't know that anybody's done, you know, negative alley-oop acid on a drop ledge like that. That's a very bizarre trick, you know, but there you go. It was a great edit. I'm really, really happy John got his skate. You know, for a guy that is, you know, always next on the list, but never the one who gets the skate. It's like he finally got the skate. We were thrilled that when I heard that John was getting a skate, Peter reached out and also wanted to do a frame. And we had already talked about doing John's frame. You know, he had his balance one frame, which was, you know, our first signature frame, which was a really good feeling bringing those out. And then he did a prime frame, which was the first signature prime frame. And then Yandi got the first balance too. But we were already planning on John's balance too. It just had to coincide with when the skates were coming out, which we knew was going to be Winter Clash. So it is just a black balance too, but it's, you know, John's balance too. It's going to be our black frame for summer. It's got his logo on the side, and you know, he'll get a royalty for him. Same price. So if you wanted to get a black balance too, now you've got an option that also helps
give John some money.
Yeah, exactly.
I might just write "From" on the side of mine. Yeah, with a silver Sharpie.
Yeah, exactly. Silver Sharpie, a white paint pen.
Yeah,
I think he'll be fine with that. And send him some money.
And they draw hearts on it.
Yeah. They also come with the red eye wheels. So ours, so we do a bundle with John's wheel. It's a 5980, 5990, sorry. And then on the inside is Chad Tannehill's anti-rocker wheel, which I think is 46 mil, but it is a urethane anti-rocker wheel that goes on the inside. In his skate, if you buy it complete, you get the balance frames with the John Fromm wheels. And I think they have black unbranded anti-rocker wheels. I don't think it's a Chad Tannehill wheel, which is fine. I mean, Chad is, you know, a great skater, but I don't know. It's kind of weird putting somebody else's wheel on a pro frame, you know, or a pro skate. I'm more than happy. You know, I gave John the option. I was like, you know, we could do UHMW anti-rocker wheels if you want. But I'm happy to do Chad. Like, whatever you would want. He skates the Chad Tannehill wheels, so it's like, well, let's just go with those. It's easier, and it's, you know, something nice that Chad gets. So,
yeah
it's a really good product. We get the frames in next week. The frames for the skates we actually had air-shipped from the factory, so they'd be ready for Winter Clash. But, you know, the full shipment gets to my warehouse end of next week, so we'll be shipping those out. Pre-orders are already live. And we'll do the bundle as well with the ready-to-roll setup with the box and the laces and all that stuff too.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So other skates from Adapt. So they also released their whole line. And there's a lot of, you know, upgrades to things. There's a new Brutale. There's new GTOs. They brought out two new masterpieces.
I think it's, did you see Tom Moyse's
video? I didn't see Tom Moyse's video. What did you Tom should say? Watch it. Okay, I'll watch it. I'll watch it.
So one comment that he made was,
yeah,
you're going to spend your rent
yeah.
on this skate.
Yes. Yeah. I'm in such a weird state with this because on one hand, it's like, do your thing. Like if people want to buy, you know, $1,000 set up, then let them buy $1,000 setup and kudos to Adapt.
But it's not $1,000. This is a €1,350 boot only.
Yes.
It's insane.
It is not cheap. Do your thing, though. I mean, if you want to spend that money, then you should go for it. There's no reason not to. I think from a practical standpoint, the Superleggera SP and the Superleggera Pista, those are, so the Pista is like their low cuff racing skate, which you see that style in racing skates. It doesn't look, you know, obviously it doesn't look exactly like that, but it's a very similar style skate where it's a low cut, it's carbon, it's, you know, big ass wheels, it's, you know, as responsive as you can get. That is what a racing skate looks like. You get the Superleggera SP, which is like a free skate, but a very weird looking free skate. It's a very open foot, you know, liner sticking out, lots of carbon and all that. Those two I can totally get behind. That's great. You know,
those make sense.
They totally make sense. It's when we get to aggressive skates that I start questioning, why would anybody spend this much money on something that,
why is this necessary?
Yeah. And
it's just already a destructive practice.
That's exactly it. I hate, and I don't know that how many they made, like 10, 20, maybe. Like, it's not a lot. I was able to hold them at Bittercold. Mm-hmm. So they had a pair at Bittercold. They are the lightest skates I've ever held.
Wow.
They probably feel amazing to skate. But then I look at my Brutale, and I see the damage that I do to the toes by falling on my ass all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm like, these are not the skates for me.
Yeah.
Maybe that, they're the skates for some people, but they're not the skates for me. I would fall down too much on them. I would hurt myself. I would damage the carbon, and then, you know, damage the carbon and you're screwed. Like, it's just, it's too, again, it's aggressive. It's too expensive for what we do. Big wheels, fine. You're not going to, you know, if you fall down, it's like, you know, riding a motorcycle, you know, like that's totally fine. You expect to fall down and damage the bike if you fall down, but you don't fall down very often.
Yeah.
If you're agreed. Skating and you fall down all the time, you're not going to, you know,
you're not going to expect $1,300 on a pair of skates.
Absolutely.
Like, it's kind of your own fault when they look like shit after 2 weeks.
Absolutely.
Did you also notice they have another super velocity skate?
Yes. The UFSE WZRD.
Yeah.
So what is the deal with that one? Does it have a sole plate or is that just...
So what it looks like to me is it just looks like...
It does have a sole plate, yeah.
Just like the tiniest little sole plate you could possibly imagine to make it...
A little more responsive, maybe? Like a second layer for UFS?
I think it's more shock absorption because I think that the Adapt boot in general, like whatever Adapt does with their soles or their the bottom of their boots, I don't think it's made well enough to really hold up to something like a Wizard. With all the lateral forces you're putting on the frames and then onto the boots, you know, and stuff like that. So what I think it is that's going to add a little bit more structure to it and then give you a little bit of cushion between your frame and your skate. I don't know how true that is. I just know that there's people that skate Wizard frames a lot that I'm sure have tried Adapts on them and found them to not be the best solution.
So
that's my thought.
But I will say that the people who tried Wizards Gate with adapts probably didn't have these soul plates. Like, the biggest issue with adapts is the soul plate is pretty wide. You know, I did find myself clipping from time to time on the negative. Because, again, the negative is as wide as the positive, as the soul side. And that's a pretty wide negative. So if you're doing very intricate edge work, totally understand why these soul plates are necessary.
Yeah.
I think the adapt has a piece of metal underneath the lining that sandwiches between the... So there's metal on the inside of the boot, and then there's the carbon, and then there's the soul plate, and then there's a frame. I think there's like a layer in there. I'm not 100% sure. That's how they're able to do it with the Seba, and why the Seba is like the main boot for wizard skating. That and I feel like the carbon is a little thicker on the Seba. I might be totally wrong, though. I know nothing about carbon skates, so if you do know, correct me in the comments or send me an email or whatever.
Absolutely. Let us know.
But I feel like that's why they have a soul plate, so that it would be a little bit more responsive and, like you're saying, maybe a little bit more cushion. Because, I mean, wizard skating has different demands than aggressive skating.
It absolutely does.
I don't know well enough what a good wizard setup would be. This might be it. You know, it looks like it's got the responsiveness that you need. It's got a lot of support. It's a low ride. I mean, that could be perfect.
Yeah, it could very well could be. And like, I talk shit, but I'll never be the guy that's going to shell out the money for a pair of Super Velaches. And at the same time, like, we've talked enough trash on this that I don't think Peter will ever take my money for anything. But, I mean, at the same time, if I said I really want a pair of, Brutales, he's not going to say no to $500-some-odd that it's going to cost.
Well, and so here's the thing. So you say that the Super Leggera Masterpiece SCWZRD, the WZRD, is €1,350, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That includes the frames and the wheels. Is it 4x90? Is that what it is? I think it's 4x90.
That is not a bad deal, though.
That's exactly my point. So, I mean, a wizard boot.
comparatively,
all right. A wizard boot. So the Seba, gutted Seba with an intuition is $700. You add a wizard frame, $400. You add wheels and bearings, and you're at another, what, $150, $200?
Yeah.
You're pretty much in the same ballpark. But here, you're getting, a handmade skate with a full carbon shell. With the wizard boot, you're getting carbon with a plastic cuff, intuition liner. Like, it's a different thing altogether, but the price is fairly comparable. Yeah, I think the weird one is the aggressive one. I think that's ultimately it. I'm all for this wizard thing. I think it's kind of weird that he would call it wizard, to be honest, because that's kind of a thing. Call it something else, but whatever, who cares? It's weird to me that there would be an aggressive version. Nothing against them, but that seems like the wrong boot for what we do. We damage things, and that's a lot to damage, doing gaps.
Agreed, yeah.
Falling off of a rail or something, and then, stubbing your toe, and boom, there goes your shell. I don't know. They have pretty good, return policies and replacement policies, and there's a note to contact them if you need repair and things like that. Totally great. But that's unprotected carbon out there, at the skate park. That's a liability.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're beautiful skates. I like to look at them. It's definitely something that I enjoy thinking of, the ingenuity that went behind them and the design ideas and the lines and stuff. It's cool to look at.
Right.
I'd never spend the money, and if I did, I'd probably never skate it because I'd be worried about ruining something I spent €1,300 on.
Right, €1,350. And
yeah, so when you look through, when you click through to reserve your build spot, which there is, I think, 12, that price does not include frames, wheels, and bearings.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I think the adapt big wheel frames are anywhere from $150 to $199. If memory serves.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, so you're spending a lot of money if you don't already have a big wheel frame on hand.
I mean, yeah.
Those compass frames will look really good on those.
I don't recommend compass frame for wizard skating, but yeah, it's a lot of money. You know, I hesitate to tell anybody how much they should spend on skates. You know,
for sure.
Do you? Like, you always get the skateboard is so cheap, and then you get the, oh, but a bike is so expensive.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, fine. Like, you know, whatever we spend on our hobbies, do you, you know? The beauty of blading is that we've got price points all up and down the board. You could get a pair of Colts for, what, $150 complete?
If that.
Right? And then you can go all the way up to this crazy shit, you know, $1,300, $1,400 or whatever. Like, we've got a range of different options for whatever price point you want. And they all have different, you know, capabilities and benefits.
Yep. Different pros, cons.
Yeah, do you?
For sure.
I love that aspect of rollerblading. Yeah. I don't think that me personally, I could justify a carbon boot at this price without, I don't know, some sort of a skin that protects it. Because I just feel like...
It would have to be something outstanding to justify that.
I'm so scared of damaging. I mean, I've damaged all of the skins that I've skated, and to be honest, the Adapt is probably the one that's held up the best.
That's good to know.
Yeah, my USD carbons are okay, but they're kind of fraying, and the FM3s, you know, I damaged the crap out of those, but they're white skates. What do I always say about white skates, Ben? Don't wear white skates; you're just going to beat the crap out of them. I feel like this is the ultimate white skate, where it's like it's an unprotected carbon.
Makes sense. That
you're going to damage the crap out of it. At least I am, because I'm not very good at skating.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of money to spend on that. But maybe I'm not the market.
Agreed. So I'm actually kind of, I don't know if I would, it'd be a stretch to call him a friend, but so we know somebody that owns a pair of the Superleggeras.
Mm.
Andrew Scherf.
Oh, I didn't know he skated those.
Yeah, so I don't know how much he skates them, but I know he has a pair.
Mm.
But he just got a pair of the white UFRs.
And, nice.
And I've recently started following him on Twitch. I don't know about recently, but for a while I've been following him on Twitch, and I've been watching his iRacing stuff.
Okay.
And it looks like a lot of fun. I just don't. We just got an Xbox Series X because the wife wants some money, you know, on FanDuel.
Nice. Over
the Super Bowl and the...
Nice.
The conference championship before that?
I don't know.
The one the Giants lost, whichever...
It's all sports ball to me.
Yeah. Yeah, sportsy stuff. So... But, so she won a couple of, you know, some schmeckles, and that offset some of the cost.
Nice.
And so now we have that, and I think I've gotten to play 90 minutes of it. and they're, you know, well past double digits of hours they've been able to play, but...
Right.
You know, at the same time, like I know they're gonna have fun, and at one point they're gonna burn out, and then I'll have it to myself.
Nice.
And then I'll get to play Gears of War 5 until my thumbs fall off.
There you go.
So I'm just waiting for that day. But so Andrew has a really cool setup. He's got like the wheel and the pedals and the shifters and stuff.
Mm.
So it's cool to watch him, and even just in the couple of laps that I've watched him do, I could see him improve and get his times quicker and stuff, and it was really neat to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And just the way that guy can boost out of a quarter pipe makes me insanely jealous. He's so good at it. Fucking jerk.
I would love to learn how to air. It seems like the one thing that's missing from my vocabulary, you know?
It's so terrifying.
It totally is, but I'm
always worried about clipping my toes.
Yeah, when you get it, it's got to be amazing, you know?
Yeah, I asked him how he did it. He said Shane Yost taught him.
No way.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I can't think of too many other people that'd be better to teach you how to boost out of a quarter pipe.
Yeah, I would think that would be, like, if I ever did, I don't know that Be Free does the Be Free Blading Academy thing anymore, but the one thing that I would absolutely pay Be Free all the money for is give me an hour of your time and tell me what I'm doing wrong with airs. Like, undivided attention. This is what you're doing wrong, you know. Get me over that confidence barrier that I could actually boost out of a quarter pipe. Because that looks like, you know, grinds are grinds. And I love grinds, but it's like, I feel like grinds for me at this point are just I know how to do them. I just need to do them more often, and then more grinds will unlock. You know, I've got my suite of 10, 20 grinds that I do fairly consistently, and some of them are more consistent than others, but I've got, you know, that suite of grinds that I can do more often.
Yeah.
Changing the way that I skate, like, I don't know how to carve a bowl fakie. That's something I would love to be able to do.
Yeah, that's a mystery.
You know what I mean? And airing, you know, out of anything. Over a launch ramp, from a quarter pipe, in a mini ramp, that is something that I would love to do. So those are my two, like, before I die or retire, my two things that I want to try to unlock. Yeah, I got to figure it out. So maybe Be Free will be around.
Here's what we'll do. The next time that we go to Clark's, we'll teach each other something. I'll try to teach you.
There's nothing to skate at Clark's, though, that we can learn on. What are we going to do? Do airs out of that quarter pipe? I don't think that's a good idea. Not until he has his big mini ramp or his big launch box thing.
His launch box? Yeah. The launch box terrifies me, though.
Yeah, I'm not interested in that.
I know the second that I go to hit it, I'm going to fly off to the right somehow, and I'm going to, you know, crack my taint open on the edge of a ramp.
And I'll be there laughing. I guarantee you.
And I would expect that.
Yeah, yeah.
100%.
Horrible idea.
If you don't laugh at that, I'll be mad at you. here's what I think we should do. I think we should dedicate at least an hour of the next compound trip to figuring out airs. That's the only thing we're allowed to do.
All right.
Is not straight airs, because that implies you're coming back in fakie, and that has its own ball. Right. That's
just
its own
nice 180.
Nice.
You know who was doing it? Was it Ed? What's his last name? Ed Chang? Is that his name?
Eddie Chung.
Eddie Chung, yeah. He was doing good airs. So I know that
Eddie
it's possible.
Eddie does good everything.
I know that it's
ridiculous.
Possible.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure Mike might be able to help with that, because he did some. Clark should be able to, because he was an instructor at Woodward. Mm-hmm. Mike is definitely a guy that you could talk to about carving. I don't know about fakie.
Mm-hmm.
But I know he's good at it. He taught me how to carve into bowls. I still don't have it down yet. But
they do have the bowl corner.
Much, much better.
So I can try learning carving in that bowl corner. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, so we'll do an hour of airs and then an hour of fakie carves.
I'm totally down with that. An hour of topsoils, an hour of airs, an hour of fakie carves. Fun fact, my job, up to now I've been just based in Raleigh and in our area, but the work that I do now is going to be up in North Virginia. So I'm going to be up there fairly often, once
that's awesome.
A quarter at least. I'll be able to actually travel up there on the company dime and come out to the ramp, after my meetings throughout the day, which is going to be a really nice way to end the day, I think.
Oh, yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I will keep you posted when I come out. We were supposed to come out, I think, mid-March, end of March, but that got postponed. So I think it's going to be mid-April now.
Okay.
But I'll let you know as soon as the dates are finalized.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome. I can't wait to skate there again with you.
Yeah.
I mean, because that's rapidly becoming
it's
the only
when
time
you get
I
to
get
skate.
To skate.
Yeah. This is our motivation
and
to get you
I
to
I need
skate.
To make more of an effort to skate more often. So, and also the base that I'm working at now, they have a skate park.
Oh, nice.
That they just closed.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Well, it was the people who made it. I don't know about the people that designed it, but the people that made it as if it was like a concrete structure. So it has the really wide expansion joints and stuff like that. And it's got that real squishy bullshit in the cracks.
Yeah.
So as that was used, and water tables rose and fell and everything like that. So there's cracks that have developed and stuff like that. So they're going to shut it down. I don't know when they're going to open it back up, but I hope they do it at some point, because I'd love to be able to take my sports lunch on that and just go cruise around for a little bit.
Just a 30-minute roll. I mean, think of how good that would be if you went every day skating 30 minutes. Like,
oh, it'd be great.
Mental health, physical health, like skating ability, like you would be killer shape by summer.
Yeah. Absolutely, I agree. Well, they have a pretty impressive gym there that I get to use too, and I had one of the dentists is a kind of young guy, and he's in good shape, and I had mentioned I was going to go to the gym, and he's like, "You better, because I'll tell you now, I'm a gym bully, and I will call you out." And I was like, "All right, fair enough." And he gave me a fair amount of shit yesterday for not going after I said that I would, and then I told him this morning that I was going to go today, and he's like, I don't believe you. I don't believe you're going to see me there. I'll see you there. So I made it a point to walk in front of him as he was doing curls or shoulder, whatever he was doing. So
that's great. I mean, anything that you can do to continue exercising, I'm all for it. It's super important to do. I've been definitely slacking up. I feel
way
up.
Better nowadays.
I skated last weekend, the weekend before, and it was amazing. Like the first skate that I've had in a long time. I've skated the mini ramp and, you know, I've skated the box. We've been doing the open houses, which has been a lot of fun. I haven't been able to do that in the last couple of weeks. Just timing has been tough and, you know, bitter cold and getting ready for bitter cold and all that. But I was able to go out and skate at Durham, which was great. You know, just I missed skating. I missed skating fast. You know, one of the things you don't get when you're skating mini ramp is you don't get the charge. You don't get the stride. You don't get the, like, skating as hard as you can to a soul grind. Like, that is a really fun feeling. And just pumping through it to a box, you know, you get the grind feeling, but you don't get the skate feeling. You don't get the speed. And, you know, my mini ramp, unfortunately, you know, it has such a quick response that you get the speed, but then you've got to jump right on and grind and get ready to come back down. It's really a training facility versus a enjoy the session facility. So I'm looking forward to skating again. I'm probably going to skate next weekend. It's hard to say, but again, more skating. You know, we need to skate more often. It's weird for me that I haven't skated much. You know, I was on such a pace where I was skating every week, and you know, my body feels like it misses it. You know, I miss skating. I miss going out there and sweating and, you know, getting my stride on. And it's something that I need to focus a little bit more on now.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely feel the same way. I think I'm going to put those, PRs back on my skates and skate those for a bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause I mean, they're so much fun.
Yeah.
And they've got wheels that I've only skated a couple times and I need to destroy them.
There you go. I have more wheels coming, so you can buy more.
Yes. It's always a fun day when I get to place an order with that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there you go. You should have more soon. More to come. So,
fantastic.
What else happened at Winter Clash? So, you know, other than the skating event itself, which I'm sure has been covered everywhere, Power Slide was really big.
Power Slide blew their load.
They've done a lot of good work lately, and they've been kind of sleeping, like, if you ask me. They haven't really released anything big. They came out with a lot. So I'll consider for this Icon part of PowerSlide, though it's completely separate. So they had, you know, frame technology. Two things that kind of caught my eye. First was the new Icon frame. So this is a really interesting frame. I don't know if it's when it's going to be announced or when it's going to be available. What is it? The AF10? Is that what it's called?
Is that the Thursday one?
Yeah. So the new frame, I don't know when it's going to be available. So there is a brand new frame, and our friend Justin Thursday designed it, which is amazing. You know, I've talked about Justin in my gear talk, which I'm still doing. He has always been a smart dude, but the fact that he was able to pivot from whatever the hell he was doing before to becoming a designer, like, ultimately he's a designer now. Like, he makes frames, he makes parts, he makes things, and that's a career. You know, he's passed his AutoCAD certification. Like, he's gotten to the point where he's a legitimate designer. Couldn't be happier for him. I think it's a really good move for him. He was asked to work with Icon to design a frame. And this frame looks very similar in style to the TR60 that he developed for the core system. It's got a really similar groove, really similar taper to the frame wall so that it comes down low, offers really good wheel bite protection. I don't know what the split is. It's pretty wide, maybe 120. I mean, I don't know how wide he can go with UFS, but it's a pretty wide frame. I've heard that the material that they're using is a super interesting, carbon fiber infused injection molding material. Like, it's super strong and super, like, rigid. It's really interesting. I don't have any information on when these are going to come out. I think this was just a sample that they were showing at Winter Clash. But Icon actually bringing out something that people are interested in was a huge move, if you ask me.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a great option for being something that no one asked for, so to speak.
Yeah.
Because I think more people need to see what Justin's capable of. And yes. So this opens it up to people who don't want to spend almost $200 on the prime frame and then his walls. Right. So, I mean, they still should because it's, you know, a fantastic option.
And they're 120. You can get Thursday frames for 120 now.
Oh, that's, yeah, because you sell them with his walls.
Frame kits. But okay. Totally,
that
makes
more sense.
I don't know how much these are going to cost, but it is a...
I can't imagine them being more than $70.
Have you seen Icon pricing?
Yeah, true. All right, $100 then probably.
Yeah, they might be similar to prime frames.
Okay,
it is a great call though. I think it's pretty awesome.
Honestly, the thing that I'm the most excited about is just that Justin is getting some of the shine that I think he's deserved from the BMAG days,
right?
From back when he was, you know, first gutting Deshi carbons and showing people how to get the skins off of carbon shells and stuff like that. So Justin, I've been a huge fan of him, you know, just what he was capable of for a number of years, mm-hmm. and then getting to meet him about what year is it, and then having him on the podcast and stuff, and just and being able to become friends with him. I count myself definitely very, very lucky to call Justin a friend.
And
to see that more people are being able to recognize what he's capable of and the crazy mad scientist ideas he has. It's really, really awesome to see. I'm very happy for it.
Yeah, I am too. And not to throw any shade towards anything, but it's weird that they are an Icon frame. You know, it feels like a Kaiser thing. And the reason that I say that is, you know, if you look at the Icon team, who do you think of?
Montre.
Right. So who does Montre skate for?
Create.
So how is this going to fit into the product line? That is the question. I don't know. You know,
is this the writing on the wall that Montre is not going to skate for Create anymore?
Or not skate for Icon, right? Yeah, who knows? Who knows? But I could see, like, if I were advising Icon, I could see a revamp where they come out with the AG10 as their high-end aggressive skate. Mm-hmm. And they say they come stock with the AG60, which is the frame.
That's
and
a good
it's like,
idea.
This is the way that they come. And that's how we recommend you skate them. And they come with frames, they come with wheels, they come with the bearings and all that. Great setup. I mean, absolutely. I think that would be super expensive, I bet. Like, this frame has got to be pricey. The boots are already pricey. Like, it's a very expensive setup. But if they're going for that high-end market, then they say, this is what we recommend. This is all set up. It's weird that Montre would be skating for a different frame company, but I don't know. I mean, I couldn't see Montre's skate coming with this frame. Maybe Montre's skate comes with a Create. Maybe Montre's skate comes as a boot only because they can't work with Create. Who knows? But, yeah, it's weird that it's from Icon because, again, I don't know what Icon is all about. Like, they're just everything that you could possibly think of for skating at a premium level. And throw it against the wall and see what sticks.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with that. I mean, I think it could... Maybe we'll see a version of the AG60 as a Kaiser frame. Maybe it'll be the JT60.
I think that would be a stretch.
But you're probably right.
To me, it's just weird that they wouldn't. I mean, maybe it isn't. I mean, again, maybe I'm overthinking it. I would love to see a complete skate from Icon and a complete aggressive skate. You know, they do have the, what is that, the Decode frame. So they do have big wheel setups. Absolutely no problem with that.
Yeah.
I want to see more of an aggressive thing. But then again, Nikon's just such a weird company to begin with. Like, there's just everything that you can think of.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at least they have a frame. Just like them. Like, you know, them for years didn't have a frame. Now Icon has an aggressive frame. You know, they needed something, so they've got something.
Yeah, like just like you're saying, like, I can't imagine seeing Chad Hornish skating those. Because it's anti-rocker.
Yeah. You know,
who's going to skate that frame not flat or rockered, technically?
But, yeah.
I mean, I'm very excited for it. I'm very excited that Justin is getting more exposure in the design part of what his world is. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a cool idea that he's being introduced with, you know, a high-end, mm-hmm. you know, a boutique brand, so to speak.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really cool idea. I think that puts a little more, you know, credibility and worth in some of his designs. And I'm very, very happy for him, and I'm happy to see that come out.
Yeah, I agree with that. Good dude. So, yeah, I'm glad that 100%. He's getting some support. They also came out, so Icon also came out with the AG30, which is the Salomon FSK boot that we'd heard about years and years ago.
Yeah.
It is a UFS FSK boot, so it's not designed for aggressive, even though it has an AG in front of it. I don't write this. I don't know where that came from, but
people are going to skate that aggressively, though. They're going to put a carbon sole on there, and they're going to do it.
Figure out a way to make it work. Yeah,
this is extremely lackluster for me. I'm not excited about that in the least.
I'm interested in it insofar as an aggressive FSK, a UFS FSK boot doesn't really exist. You know, aside from, I guess, the Seba SX, but that's really the CJ that they just didn't put a sole plate on.
Yeah.
This is something that isn't designed for, I mean, I guess some of the K2 skates are UFS, so that's the exception. But yeah, but
those,
it's a really
those are just mildly massaged caddies.
Yeah, we don't care about K2.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Except for that one time.
That one time.
We're not going to talk about that, though.
I was young. The fact that there's a skate coming, and the fact that there's a Salomon skate coming back.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. You know, as much as I hate that people are still skating Salomons, that there's a lot of good options out there, that, you know, hipster aggressive setups with the Salomons, that the fact that the top, you know, three at Winter Clash and the top three at Bitter Cold, two of which at both of those events were skating Salomons, just frustrates me.
Yeah.
Because there's boot companies out there that could really use the support. Why are you skating 20-year-old skates? But whatever. New Salomons is kind of cool. And I never skated these FSK skates. I might get a pair boot only and just try them out, try them with a Wizard setup, try them with a Big Wheel setup. I don't know what the pricing's going to be. I don't know when they're going to be out. But it looks like a good option, you know, if they can keep the pricing relatively, approachable. Yeah, I think they do really well for a Big Wheel setup. But who knows? I mean, again, it's UFS is weird. UFS has always been for aggressive skaters. Selling a Big Wheel UFS boot that isn't aggressive is kind of a weird flex. But
yeah, I mean, if it works and there's enough support in the boot, because something the boot looks too soft, in my opinion. I've not skated them. You had a pair of the old Salomon FSKs, right?
I do, but I don't. I mean, they're a size 8, so I don't fit in them.
Okay.
They feel like they have the support.
Okay.
The problem, you know, they have a 45-degree strap. So with a 45-degree strap and a soft boot, it usually fits pretty well. Okay. I mean, if you look at where the support is, it's very similar to like a Adapt or any other carbon boot. It just has the plastic around it. So I would liken this probably to a carbon-free, which is probably fine. But as you get bigger, you know, 100 mil wheels or whatever, it's a little bit more difficult to stay stable. Because we need, you know, carbon, we need some sort of a wrap, the plastic boot, plastic lace-up boot, 45-degree ratchet buckle, that sort of thing. That's why FSK skates usually have that style, you know. Swell is probably an exception, but most of them have more of a plastic look to them, less of a soft boot. But that's what I'm interested in. I want to see what these skate like, especially for a free skate style.
Yeah, and I think you're right. When you if you're in the smaller wheel sizes, I would say probably 72 to 80 probably be the best for me in that boot. I think that's going to be its sweet spot, and that's the only way that you're going to find me excited about it. Like, there's nothing about it that stands out to me that's like, oh yeah, I gotta have that.
Yeah. But
for the people who want to have a dedicated big wheel skate and want the comfort of that shell, let's be honest, they're not going to get the comfort out of the liner. That looks like a straight up basic, you know, MyFit liner.
Yeah.
But you know, there's plenty of liner options that are available, and I think people are going to be pretty happy with them.
We will see. I don't know when they're going to come out. I don't know what the price is going to be, but
yeah, not
what
cheap.
Would you pay boot only? Is that like a $200 boot only, $300 boot only?
What would I pay?
Do you expect it to be?
What like, I expect it to be 360.
If it were to a big success,
yeah.
So it might be 360. What if it was a success? Guess. What would it cost if it were something that people would want to buy?
I think for the its best option of success between 300 and 325.
Yeah, I think around 300 boot only would be where I would want to be. Anything higher than that, and I think you're asking for a lot for a boot. But
agreed, yeah. I mean, because like even now, like even still, if you look at you know Roller Warehouse's website, the 2019 like those all black carbons, they're on special right now for $320 boot only still.
Yeah.
And those were 370, I think it was. 370 or 380 when they dropped. So they didn't come down a whole lot. So that either means they still have them and the distributor won't let them drop the price, or they re-upped and it's still a current, you know, SKU, so they can't discount them yet. But I mean I'll always say that the carbon is a good skate, you know, and it's worth it. It's just I probably wouldn't get it until I can find it in my size on clearance.
Yeah, there you go.
But again, I'm happy with my UFR, so I can't complain.
It doesn't really matter anymore. So what else? Power Slide. So they also introduced the Kaiser suspension frames. Have you seen these things?
Yes. I don't know.
So interesting, right?
Yeah. I don't know how excited I am about these. So there's two sides of the coin for me for the excitement. I'm excited for the fact that I think it's the better design for suspension than what was previously available. Because I think it's closer to the physics idea, and I think the physics idea was a much, much better solution than what else we've seen.
Agreed.
I think it's going to be too expensive because I think they're going to over-engineer it, which is good. But based on the way that I'm understanding the pictures that I've seen and some of the Kaiser provided animations and stuff, it looks like it's going to be over-engineered, which to me means it's going to be at least $150 to $180 frame. I would love to skate them, but I'm not going to do it.
I do wonder about the cost. I think that's a really good question. How much for physics at their prime?
I think they're between 150 and 180, depending
on what you got. I kind of think 150. Yeah, I think 150 is kind of where they were.
I think those are the all-plastic arms.
Maybe. And then 180 was metal, maybe.
Yeah, then when they did the Pros and the XTs and stuff, when you can get the aluminum rocker arms, I think that's when you got into the 180s.
I think that's fair. So I'm looking at... It's hard to find, but they have... some links on Blade Tech's Instagram that you can see some of the suspension. The way that it changes from the physics frame is, so the physics frame had four individually rockering, shocking, whatever, wheels. So each of the wheels had its own bushing that it would push up against inside the frame. These are... two bushings. So the first and second wheel use a single bushing, and the third and fourth wheel use a single bushing. So when you're, I don't know what difference it's going to make, but when you're pumping, two wheels would take one bushing, two wheels would take another bushing. The theory is that since they're on these rocker arms, kind of like a little seesaw, right? It would bump up against this bushing, and while the bushing would be different durometer, different thickness, different hardness, I should say, mm-hmm. it will give you a little bit more flexibility and like a little bit more bounce when you're skating. I don't know anything about suspension frames. I've never skated suspension frames in my life. This design reminds me of the Kaiser suspension frames of yore, the anti-rocker ones or the freestyle ones.
Yeah.
But they have additional wheels. So I think those were designed that way because the patent was still valid from Sprung Technologies, that the one that, that Physics licensed. Okay. I don't think that patent is valid anymore. So I think that is a reason why you're now seeing suspension frames in here. Super interesting, though. The fact that there is a suspension frame in the works is really, really interesting to me. They also offered not just a suspension frame, but a full sole kit suspension frame. So the sole is built into the frame, and the sole would then mount to the boot. Guess what boots the sole frame are designed to fit right on without any modification?
Adapts.
Solomon's. What the fuck? I know. I know.
That doesn't make any sense to me. Unless, is this foreshadowing for something else that PowerSlide bought?
I don't think so.
Because that's the only way that it makes sense to me.
I don't think so.
They've made another big investment, and they found more Solomon molds, and they're going to come out with the PowerSlide ST line. Yeah, that's the only way that it makes sense to me.
I really don't think so. They came out with the what was it, the last, the aluminum ones.
Yeah.
They had the mounting pattern for the Solomons as well. Why we're making new hardware in 2023 that fits skates that were released in 2002, I don't understand that. I don't understand what the motivation is behind that.
Yeah, like, there's not that many people that are skating them. If you want to do something that's going to turn shit upside down, make it fit a cult.
Well, what I
and
would
even
recommend,
then, that's still topsy-turvy.
What
make
I would
it
recommend,
fit a seven.
Right. Do something that promotes your brand. Like,
yeah.
That shouldn't be too difficult to explain to people. But when you make things for other people's brands, it doesn't promote your brand very much. Like, I would love nothing more than them to update the USD Carbon with the hole pattern that follows the Solomon.
Yeah.
So that now you've got six or eight or whatever the hell, however many holes that you had. Update that boot so that now the sole plates fit into it. And not only that, but you could use the sole plate mounting instead of UFS.
Yeah. Then you can
because
eliminate
you
those two bolts.
All of those things. You eliminate the two bolts. You've got a new USD carbon that fits this sole plate.
And you could still even have the receptors in it.
You could do whatever you wanted because it's your boot. And hey, you're still making them. Unlike Solomon, who stopped making them 10 fucking years ago.
Yeah, at least.
I think that would be, you know, I'm offering free advice, of course.
Yeah.
I think that would be an amazing... amazing next step if USD went and they updated the carbon mold so that they added additional mounting plate, mounting holes so that you could put this sole frame in there. Boom.
Yep.
Imagine that. You wouldn't have to use UFS anymore. Not that I don't love UFS, but the biggest thing with the USD carbons is that they rely on the two bolts for UFS.
And that's problematic.
And that's not, it's not what you want. You want that solid mount of a sole plate to the boot.
Yep.
And then you want to mount the frame to UFS. You don't want that sloppy flop. You don't want that. That's why Adapt has the sole plate. Sloppy flop.
Yeah.
That's why Adapt has the sole plate underneath the Wizard. They could go directly to the carbon, but then it would just be UFS mounting to it. So instead, they put a sole plate on there. That gives it a wider surface area, solid material, gives you a much more rigid, solid, responsive ride. That would be my recommendation if anybody's listening from USD. Definitely update that USD carbon. I mean, it's got to be so easy to update a carbon boot, right?
Yeah,
and then
they would still have the option of of having UFS options too.
Keep it in there. Equal opportunity mounting. Like, just don't make a mounting standard around a sole plate that hasn't been sold in 10 years. Like, that just makes no sense to me.
And you're 100% right. There's very little reason to make that a selling point. That should be something that they tell to distributors, to shops, say, hey, if you have someone that says, I have a pair of Solomons, I have broken frames, what can I do? Right. Power slides got you covered.
The ST8. I've got ST8s or ST9s
yeah.
that are pre-UFS. What do I do?
Yeah.
From 20 years ago. Well, yeah. you know, your shocks are probably crumbling. You need some
SL shocks. You're going to support lots of people today.
Yeah, yeah.
Lots of distributors are going to be happy with you today.
You know what? How about this? How about we make a deal? They can come out with this if they sponsor Joe Atkinson. Ooh. Then at least like somebody will be using Salomon boots and it will be totally legit. I'm just an idea guy. I just come up with the ideas.
You come up with some good ones. I can't think of one that hasn't been good yet.
I mean, there's...
You haven't listened to any of mine.
I say a lot of shit. You
come up with good ideas. So.
Yeah. You don't remember the bad ones. That's the problem. It's super interesting. Yeah, exactly. Super interesting. I love the fact that they're reinvesting. I say what you will about Kaiser, and I have. They don't care. They go out there and they make the craziest shit. And sometimes it lands and sometimes it doesn't. But much respect to, you know, Matthias and the whole gang over there for following up with their crazy ideas and doing something. Yeah. Like, you can't just play it safe anymore. And they're not a follower.
No, like, definitely not.
In no way are they looking at what other people are doing and saying, oh, we need something like that.
Yeah.
They are just going out there, guns blazing, and they're like,
let's try it.
Let's try it. See what happens, right? Maybe it'll work. Maybe it won't. Like, who cares? Like, let's just give it a shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really impressive. I was stoked to see that at Winter Clash. Definitely the most unexpected announcement at Winter Clash for me.
For sure. You know what is a very unexpected announcement that happened because of Bitter Cold for me?
Oh, Bitter Cold or Winter Clash?
Bitter Cold.
What was the most unexpected Bitter Cold announcement that hit for you?
Jeff Dalness going back to USD.
Very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Do you think he's back on USD or is he just like done with Trigger and started skating USDs?
I think he's done with
Trigger. Because he just had them.
Yeah, and then I think he reached out because he has those, the new Carlos Bernals, the black ones. I think he said, hey, what do you got in a size 8 or whatever his size is? And just, I don't care what it is. I just need something that's not these Triggers. Because it looked like he ripped his UFS mounts out of the boot.
Yeah, something really bad happened to him. I don't know if he was skating at the time. Yeah, exactly. I hope he wasn't skating at the time. I don't know what was going on. But yeah, I see his post 2 days ago. It's been a good run with Trigger Skate, and I couldn't thank Xavier more for what he's done for me, but now it's onto a new path. Shout out to USC Skates for hooking me up with one of my current favorite skaters, Carlos Bernal Pro Model. Stay tuned for clips. Yeah, I mean, wasn't he already on USD back in the days?
Yeah, he was on USD for a long, long time.
Like, yeah,
he
exactly.
He even had a carbon-free...
Carbon-free, yeah. Yeah, totally.
So he really, really liked the Imperial before the carbon-frees were a thing because that was a carbon-free, essentially, that was a little bit taller and it didn't have a cuff.
So
he was a really, really big fan of those because I'd reached out to him because I was kind of interested in them. And so I said, hey, like I see you skating these a lot. Do you like them? Do you recommend them? And he said, I love them. They're some of my favorite skates that I've ever had. And he definitely did recommend them. And then now carbon frees are a thing.
Very true.
But yeah, like I'm excited to see him back on carbons because I think that was probably the best skate. The best way that his skating looked was in carbons.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, again, that's me being, you know, biased because that's what I liked him. And it's just nice to see him not in triggers.
Yeah.
Because again, nothing against them. They don't do anything to tickle my tonsils, so to speak.
Right.
There's nothing about them that makes me go, ooh.
Whereas
a lot of the USD carbons have done that. I don't think there's been a miss with the USD carbons that I can think of, maybe the fringe on the Montres. That's probably the only thing that I was just like, I don't love that. But other than that, I've loved pretty much every other pair of USD carbons that's been made.
Yeah. They're good skates.
It
frustrates me when technology fails a skater.
Yeah.
And I don't know anything about Trigger or their history or like where they're made, what they're made from, that whole thing. I know that Jeff put in so much time and effort, and I don't know Jeff. You know, I've never met him. I saw him at Bitter Cold, but I don't know him at all. It sucks that he put in so much time and effort into and energy into building this brand, and end of the day, it was a equipment malfunction that pushed him over the edge. Now, I don't know how many times those skates malfunctioned on him outside of this event. You know, yeah. It seems to me like the him moving from skating and getting a pro skate with Trigger to just saying, I'm done, I'm skating USDs, probably a recurring thing. Like, that's not to say that they're bad skates, I never skated them, but he might be putting them through the paces that he just can't. Like, he skates big stuff. He skates drop rails. He skates a lot of gaps. Like, he puts some serious stress on the skates.
For sure.
I don't know what happened, but I heard they kind of exploded on him at Winter Class or at Bitter Cold. That's unfortunate, you know, because as a manufacturer, all we want to do is make cool stuff that people can
rely on.
Skate at a high level. Yeah, exactly. Rely on that they're not going to get hurt. And I you know, hats off to Trigger for having to deal with that. Like, it sucks, you know. Wheel companies definitely probably take it more than anything, because wheels, one bad pour and you can kind of just get screwed. Having a skate explode, I mean, I remember the Cyrus, the white Cyrus, I think it was the Shimas. They kept falling apart and breaking. And we had white frames made at the same factory, and they kept falling apart and breaking. And it turns out that the material that they were using at that factory was not good. Okay. We actually switched factories after that, and we ended up going with, you know, a different manufacturer altogether. But that's just, you know, the kiss of death.
And the fact that it absolutely can be.
Yeah, the fact that you were able to, you know, get past that and refund. Like you look at the Mook frame, you know, the first release of the Mook frames, just cracking in half, every single one of them. And like, all right, like, how do we get through this? So again, hats off to Trigger. I wish you the best with getting through this. It's got to be a PR hit, but ultimately, you know, I haven't skated the skates. I don't think you would be in business if they weren't good skates. You know, I don't know the distribution here in the U.S., but the fact that they're continuing to make them, you know, whenever I get somebody calling in all fired up saying, these wheels are shit and they fall apart and I've cored them and blah, 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 I'm like, if every single wheel cored like you think that they do, why would I be able to stay in business? Like,
yeah,
it's a one-off that something bad happened. Yeah. You know, it's unfortunate that it happened at Bitter Cold in front of a big stage, but you know, the skates are probably fine. Like, I've never heard of anybody breaking them. So it sucks. You know, more power to Jeff for finding greener pastures. Maybe he's skating for USD. Maybe he's just skating some USD skates. But, you know, I hope that he's happy, and I can't wait to see some clips.
Yeah, agreed. I'm excited to see more clips of him. But it really seemed like people knew that this was the last Bitter Cold, because there was a lot of really cool shit that happened.
You know, it was a good event, yeah.
As we were talking about Jeff, like, he was doing that gap to the other side of the down box. And not just a couple of tricks. Like, I saw him do a soul grind. I saw, like, 4 or 5 clips of that, and I was like, oh, okay, cool, he's got that. Next thing I saw a fucking backslide. And then, you know, then I'm pretty sure I saw a kind grind. I think I saw an alley-oop top pour, and I was like,
yeah, man,
all right, he's definitely pulling out all the stops. And then
he went big, yeah.
Yeah, and then Joe Atkinson did the fucking ridiculous 180 over the launch box.
Yep.
That looked like he was trying to go over a rafter.
Yes.
So crazy. Like, there was so much cool stuff that happened that I saw. China did some really incredible, that top sole on that weird bank thing to the drop sole and then come back. That was fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, she's amazing. Luke, you know, obviously won it, but he's incredible. Like, he just destroyed that park. The things that he was able to do, you know, he had a home court advantage, obviously.
Yeah.
But he was doing things that... So there was some controversy over who should have won. And the judges were all unanimous, as far as I knew, that, you know, Luke was supposed to take top, you know, first place. Okay. The guy is amazing. he was doing things that he's never been able to do. And I don't know if you've ever been in the zone. Like, I've never been in the zone for rollerblading. I have with hockey. And I can liken it to things just slowing down, kind of like the Matrix, where,
oh, yeah.
You know, I've been at a point where I can see what people are going to do seconds before they do it. And I can just, it doesn't happen often. And I feel like these elite skaters, you know, the Joe Atkinsons and stuff, they get to a point where they just see the park in a different way. And things just flow. And I've been in that zone before with hockey, and I've been able to just, you know, flow around the rink and, you know, score whenever I wanted to. And it was, you know, especially like if the game is tied and I need to, or we're one behind and I need a goal within like 20 seconds or something like that. Like I could force myself into that. I was able, not anymore, but I was able to force myself into that zone. I feel like Luke was in that zone. And he was doing things that people who know him have never seen him do before. Like, just ridiculous switch-ups on high obstacles, low obstacles, you name it.
Yeah.
The guy was just on fire.
Yeah, the top acid to true top acid to true top 360 acid to Cesslide in. That was insane.
Insane. That insane. Was nuts. It's like he was just, like, he would land one thing and then he would push the pause. And he's like, okay, I'm going to reset for the next trick. And then take a break, and then push go, and then do it again. It's like he just had so much control. Everybody else was just kind of skating there. They did big tricks, and I think that was the one thing that Luke was missing, is that he didn't skate the course like it was a feast course.
Yeah.
You know, like how CJ was doing or Kudo was doing. They were skating it like a feast course, and it was just this big flow, 360s, 900s, all that stuff. It was a very, like, street style, you know, run for him. I mean, it could have gone either way. I do think Joe skated amazing. You know, he's incredible. Being able to see him skate in person, it's like, I mean, I've never seen anybody skate that flowy before. He had a very, like, Aaron Feinberg style to him in person, where it was just like everything just kind of, like, he just knew the park better than anybody, and he'd only been there for a day. Like, that's, he's just wild. That good at skating. Yeah, it was incredible.
I also saw that, who was I just going to say? There's someone else that did a lot of really great shit. Zach Savage.
He did, oh, a lot, yeah, of Zach really skated cool stuff. Really well. Yeah,
he,
yeah, yeah.
So he was at Woodward for the first, what year is it? And,
okay.
And, like, I didn't really know who he was at first. And then once I found out and I looked him up on Instagram, I was like, holy shit, this kid is the future. Because he was a kid. I think he was 19 there.
Mm.
So I'm watching him. I was like, wow, this guy's really, really good. And then I've been following him since then and just seeing him get even better and better and better and better and better. It's really incredible. And I'm just, every time I see him post a new clip and he's, you know, added another spin to, you know, true top horn or, you know, some crazy stuff, he's so good. I love watching that guy skate.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah. I think he should have gotten a little bit more shine in that. But again, like, I wasn't there. I didn't watch any of the live feeds or anything like that. But I think he probably should have gotten, at the very least, like, an honorable mention. I was like, oh, by the way, Zach Savage is still fucking awesome. It's red rollerblading, and he's a home,
yeah,
home boy too. So,
I wonder where he ended up. If he was in, like, you know, top five or whatever.
Yeah,
He made it to the semis, right? Yeah, I think he made it to the semis.
If he didn't, it's a travesty, and they should burn park down.
No, I think he did. I think he made it to the semis. Yeah, it was a good event. So I'll tell you my. I think we're done with Winter Clash. What else happened at Winter Clash? Did we think of any? I don't remember. Oh, the Shima. We got to talk about Shima.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like we didn't know that this was going to happen, but there was a Shima 3. Brian was out at Winter Clash, announced it that week. Selling really well, as I've heard from my shop insiders. I mean, who doesn't want a classic Shima skate, right? The Shima 1 sold really well. The Shima 3... fire skate. Looks great.
Yep.
The fact really that good. Brian was skating it in his promo, and he looked like he was having a great time. That really made me happy. You know, the poor guy gave his life to blading. Yeah. And he got screwed over because he hurt himself.
Yep.
And it's like, what do you do now? And, you know, he didn't go to school for business. He didn't go to school for anything, really. He was a rollerblader. And he paid the price. And that sucks. So yeah. Seeing him out there skating again made me really happy. I hope that he gets a good royalty payment on this because, you know, Brian was the face of Razors for so long. And he did, in my opinion, he did what needed to happen to bring Razors into that upper echelon of skates that wasn't possible before. You know, it was Rollerblade, it was K2, and it was USD. And those were the only skate brands that really mattered back then. And then Shima joined Razors. And it was like, oh, shit, here we go. And he just destroyed it. You know, and then shortly after Ground Control came out, John Elliott was a big thing. Then Chris Haffey. And it was like, this is the new line of skaters. And he was, in my eyes, one of the main reasons why Razors was such a huge hit back then. Which then led to, you know, Murda, and then led to Brian Aragon. But that wouldn't have been possible without Brian,
yeah.
In my opinion.
I would agree.
So for him to get these tribute skates, love it, absolutely love it. You know, it sucks for skaters like, you know, Broom, who's been waiting forever for his pro skate, or for all the skaters who left because they were just tired of waiting. I don't like that. I think that there's room for more than one signature skate a year. I think that's a thing that you deserve. Your riders deserve a signature skate. But, you know, it's nice to see Brian getting something, I guess.
Absolutely.
It is kind of weird that, who has it? There's been like 3 signature skates between the Shima 1 and the Shima 2, I think. Maybe 4?
Yeah, so there's the Nicholas Arroyo.
The Arroyo, the Jeff Howard.
And the two Derek Henderson, right? 2s, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe one Derek and then Shima and then the Derek 2. So maybe 3 yeah. skates. I mean, I wish that more active pros were getting pro skates. I get it, though. I get that Shima brings in, you know, the sales, and I know that they're selling really well. At $400, that's a crazy colt.
Yeah, there's not a chance in hell I'm spending that on a colt.
We were talking about how colts were, you know, like, $150 or so complete.
Yeah.
There you go. Like, $400 for a colt. Now, granted, it comes flat. It comes with a Featherlite 4. It comes with a Shima liner. It comes with a Shima skin. Like, it's definitely a higher-end Colt.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's a Colt. Yeah. It's pretty crazy.
I mean, like, I would love to see them do, if the Shima 7 comes out, like, if they get to the Shima 7, which was, I believe that was the black and silver one.
Mm-hmm.
Shima 4, that's the one I was thinking of. That was the weird khaki one when the Genesis. So if they get to that, and they make a fucking Genesis, I'm not going to be happy.
They'll make a Genesis, dude. I don't think they'll make a Genesis.
So if they called it, you know, the tribute Shima 4, and then put that color boot out in an SL, I think that would be a good way for them to make even more sales, because there's going to be people that like the SLs. There's going to be people that like the different colored parts for their SLs. And then there's going to be people that are going to buy it because it has Shima's name on it and it's something different.
Of course.
So I think that would be the better way to go for them if they were to get that far. But I still think Andrew Broom needs a skate before that happens.
Yeah, I would hope so. Yeah, I wonder what the next pro skate is. Do you have any speculation?
Do I have speculation? Yes.
Is it going to be a current pro or a retired pro?
I think it'll be a current pro. It's either going to be another Derek Henderson or another Jeff Howard.
Because
I don't think there's really anyone else that's on Razors that has the name recognition to be able to draw for a pro boot other than Andrew Broom. But I think Andrew Broom is going to get a pro shift when it happens. And I can't think of anyone else that could possibly get one.
I mean, Jason is the next guy, Adriani. He's the only other person that I can think of that would be on that list.
Yeah. He is exceptionally good.
Yeah.
I don't hear his name very often, though. I hear his name
a
lot on Platform, on that podcast. I hear him there a lot because, I think there's proximity there. Mm-hmm. But he is unbelievably talented. I just don't know if he's going to have the name recognition with enough people to make it worth, unless he comes up with a really, really hot colorway. Like if it's like a white, like a mostly white with black accents and something like that, I think that could probably work. And that would probably sell well. But I don't know if that one's going to happen. I would think that Inner Room will get it before Jason does.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
I think both of them deserve it, but I would put my money on Andrew Broom as well.
Yeah,
I don't know anything, but that would be my hunch.
Yeah, Broom's getting a shift. I'm going to say there's going to be gray highlights. You'll have a white cuff. I don't know if it's going to be a black boot though, but that's my prediction. Gray highlights, white cuff. Don't know anything else yet.
I'll write it down.
All right, so we're going to go back to Winter Clash for the Razor stuff. I think we got that out of the way.
Yep, I think Razors, we talked about Powerslide and Icon. We talked about Adapt. I think that was really it. Faction had the Shred Pool there. They announced that a little bit earlier, which I think is great. They have a wish frame on it, which is cool. I don't know when they're coming in. I think this month. But it's great to see that there's a new faction boot out there. It's what, black and red and white, kind of a little bit of everything for the colorways.
Yeah, it's an interesting colorway. It's growing on me. I remember when it first came out, I was just like, the only reason I would buy this is because it has Shredpool's name on it.
We got to support the Shred.
Yeah, and like I don't like the colorway, but
okay. It's growing on you.
That's me, yeah. And it was actually Hood Panda's last video that he did that really made it grow on me. So the more that I'm seeing them, the more that I'm liking them. And the other, like the teal highlighted boot, Cameron Card let loose that was a sample for his Pro Skate.
Oh, nice.
So that's kind of neat.
Yeah, that would be really great.
Yeah, that gray is a weird color, though. Like the gray on the quarter, the Vamp, I think Nike calls that section of their shoes.
Okay.
I'm not a huge fan of that. I think it's a little on the light side. Like if it was a little bit darker, I think it'd be good. Or if it was a little bit lighter, I think it would be good. But again... Mm-hmm. Not my pro boot.
yeah.
I'm not the one writing the checks to make them work yet. So I can't complain too much. I'm just happy that people that I know are getting pro boots, and I'm really happy about that. And I'm still waiting on China's white tactical V1 for her pro skate, because I think that would look great.
I agree. I don't know anything, but I do think that China's slotted to get a skate. I hope that it is soon, because she's incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I knew that she was just from watching her edits and her Instagram, and then getting to watch her at the compound.
Yeah.
It's so much better. Holy shit.
Yeah.
She's so good.
She's incredible. Yeah.
So precise. Like watching her do those three stars. Like
how, man?
Come on.
Technician. Yeah, she's incredible.
Is it time?
We want to talk about Bitter Cold? Okay, we'll talk about Bitter Cold. So,
oh, no, you know what I want to talk about.
We can talk about Bitter Cold, and I'll get to the rest, yeah.
Okay, good. I'm excited.
So Bitter Cold was great. Bitter Cold, my first big event, I went to Grindsgiving in November, and I was able to get out to Bitter Cold this month. And it, we had a booth for Everything Balance, and it led me to want to do more events. I feel like it's a good opportunity to meet with everybody. Ultimately, I think I connect with people in a weird way. I've got the Instagram, I've got the Facebook and all that, but most of all, I've got the YouTube channel. And people know me. Like, I had so many people come up at Bitter Cold and say, "Hey, I love your videos." And it's like, it's weird because I'm not a good skater. And to see people watch my videos who are much better than me is a very strange it's a very strange balance of attention. You know, it's like,
yeah.
There are plenty of other good skaters out there that you could watch. Why would you ever want to watch mine? And I feel like that's a very unique spot that I have in the industry. You know, there are good skaters out there who put on YouTube videos. There are skaters worse than me that make YouTube videos. But I sit in this weird spot where I'm like, good enough that I can make a video, but not good enough that people feel like I'm too good. You know, like I'm approachable level of skating. And I love being in that little pocket. And it feels like people appreciate that. They come to me and they say, hey, I love your videos. And I got back into skating and I watched your stuff and I was super into it and all that sort of thing. So definitely felt great about that.
And you're very knowledgeable as well.
And
you're articulate.
So that,
I think that's a big thing.
I think the gear talk definitely helps as well. And I heard a lot of, I watch your videos, you helped me with X, skate crisis, right? Like, I didn't know what I should do, so I watched your video, and you told me that this was better than this, or you told me that these are worth spending money on, or this is where you need to fix things. Like, that's the sort of knowledge that I love to share that I've acquired over the years from making mistakes myself and learning that is unique. Again, I think I have this unique perspective on that sort of thing. So being at these events, I get to meet with people in person, and it's kind of a weird rock star sort of vibe because everybody knows me, but I don't know anybody.
Yeah.
You know, like, and they know me intimately. You hear people hear your voice and they're like, I know that voice. And it's like, fuck, like, I don't know anything about you, but you've listened to thousands of hours of me talking. You know, it's a weird, weird mix that we've got. But being at an event, it meant a lot to me. Like, it meant a lot being able to see people who, you know, I've impacted, like, their lives, or, like, even if just in a little bit they were familiar with me, they could come up and they can say, hey, like, it's weird building things in a silo where I go out filming by myself, I do gear talk by myself, I do production and shipping by myself. So interacting with people who skate is a really good feeling. And I'm loving it at the warehouse, seeing people who skate. And I think the events is another good opportunity for that. So with that being said, we are going to have a booth in future events. I think it's important that we have a booth. I don't know what level. I kind of went a little big for this one. We had a booth with all of the brands represented. I shipped a ton of product out there. And the reason why is my wife hurt herself. Like we said in the beginning of the podcast, she broke her leg. You know, she broke her kneecap and she was unable to take care of herself, which means that she's not able to drive, which means that my kids can't get to and from school. So instead of leaving on Thursday, which is what my plan was, jump in the car Thursday morning after drop off and drive to Detroit, which is a 12-hour drive, but
yeah, that's no joke.
I was gonna bring all of the product. So I had, you know, all of our displays, all of the stuff we were going to sell. Instead, I ended up flying out at 7 o'clock on Friday night and flying in at, you know, 12:30. I got there to Detroit Metro at 12:30. And I had to ship all of the product. So I shipped it to Stefan's house, who's, you know, 3 hours away. So he drove from Columbus to Detroit with 3 boxes of product.
Wow.
That, you know, we were able to sell. I was planning on bringing everything with me. So we made all of these displays for all of the wheels, all of the frames. We had a display for the pricing. We had, you know, card reader for credit cards and stuff like that. I brought those with me because I thought it would be safer for me to have them just in case, you know, a box gets lost by UPS or whatever, or, you know, Stefan can't make it for whatever reason. Right. But my luggage got lost, so I had a connection from Raleigh to Newark, and then from Newark to Detroit, and my luggage got lost in Newark. So I get to Detroit, and I'm like, yeah, it's the worst. I get to Detroit, and I have no bag. So at 12:30 at night, I'm realizing all of my samples are gone. what do I do? And there's no way they're going to be here by, you know, we're setting up at 8 a.m. the next morning.
Yeah.
So it's like, what do I do? So we just made it work. So the next morning, Stefan goes to Walmart at 6:30 and is like buying random shelving things that he can, you know, like desk shelving, so that we could display product. And he was like the MVP of the weekend, without a doubt. Like, he put in so much work to make this happen.
That's awesome.
It's incredible. I'm so fortunate to have him in my life. He's just this amazing person that, I don't know what I did to deserve him. You know what I mean? Like, it's a weird, like, I don't know. The dude's just incredible. So, couldn't be happier. Again, thanks, Stefan, if you're hearing this. But he got up early and got all the stuff. And I just texted and I'm like, hey, we're fucked. Here's what we need. I've got product because Stefan brought it with him. And I have a coat rack, right? But I need hangers. I need a way to display stuff. I need some way to display the pricing sheet. I need some sort of a tablecloth so it doesn't look like ass. And we can make do with the rest, right? I'm going to go to sleep. I'll be up at 7 o'clock because I need a little bit of sleep, because I'm still not sleeping because we got the stupid dog that wakes up at 6:30 every morning and I'm still not sleeping.
Yeah.
But, and I took a red eye the night before, right? Well, not red eye, but I got in at 12:30.
Close enough.
Eventually, I mean, I got in at 1:30. So Guy Crawford picked me up from the airport at like 12:30 and we drove, you know, 45 minutes to the hotel. So we didn't get to bed until like 2, oof, maybe 2:30. And, you know, we were up at 7 or whatever. I set my alarm for 7 because I'm like, I got to shower. I got to get ready. I got to eat because we got to set up at 8 because they opened the doors for the trade show at 9. And most people were setting up on Thursday or on Friday, but obviously I wasn't there yet.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a bit of a shuffle. So, yeah, Stefan killed it. You know, thanks to Guy, obviously, for supporting and getting me from the airport and all that stuff. But, yeah, it was a pretty hectic night. So we get there, and it's amazing. So we're setting up. You know, there's a ton of booths. This was my first real trade show since Blading Cup back in 2018. And it was really great to see. You know, I didn't get around to the booths much. To be completely honest, when we got there at 8 o'clock, I spent the next hour setting everything up. And then as soon as the doors opened, I was nonstop until 1. Like, I didn't stop talking the entire time. I didn't get to any of the other booths. It was a flood of people. I didn't see the other booths, but I have to assume that we were probably the busiest booth there was.
Wow,
and
that's
it
awesome.
It was nonstop. I mean, we sold through, like, of the 3 boxes that I bought, we sold through 2 boxes of product.
That's great.
And that's, you know, from Mushroom Blading, from Fitty Fitty, from Compass, from Chroma and Standard, like, everything was just flowing out the door. And if anything, the bottleneck was because I didn't have my credit card reader because it was in the suitcase that got lost. I had to manually enter all of the credit card transactions.
Oh, Jesus, that sucks.
It was the worst. Yeah, I had like 3 people waiting to buy stuff at one time. It was like, God damn it.
It's a good problem to have.
It's a great problem to have. I just wish that I didn't waste people's time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's great, though. I'm glad that you did so well there.
Yeah, it was good. The next events, I don't know that I'll bring as much product. Maybe I'll bring some stuff, like the new stuff. But Long was out there selling stuff, too, so it was nice that there were actual shops there. I always feel weird, like, selling at a shop at an event where a shop is also selling, because I never want to compete with shops. But, you know, maybe if I communicate a little bit better with any of the shops that are there, and I sell my stuff and they sell stuff that isn't being sold, maybe that's a good in-between. I don't know. I mean, so long as we don't compete on price, I don't think it's a big deal. Either way, it really doesn't matter. But yeah, it was a busy day. I kept my mask on the entire time. So one of the things about Winter Clash was everybody got COVID.
Yeah.
And if they didn't get COVID, they got the flu. And if they didn't get the flu, they got sick. And it's like, I didn't want to be that person because, as you've heard, my days are extremely busy right now. You know, I've got to get the kids to school. I've got to do my normal job. I've got to do, you know, shipping for balance. I got to take care of my wife. I've got a lot of things on my plate, so I cannot afford to get sick. So I was masked the entire time. There were a few other people who were masked, but really it wasn't a big, you know, masking event. It
wasn't a big concern.
It wasn't. And I'm happy to say that at the end of the day, a lot of people got sick, but I haven't heard anybody getting like COVID level sickness, no flu level sickness, no, you know, fevers or chills or anything like that. Some sore throats. It was snowing one of the days. Temperature change, I could totally get that.
Yeah, that makes
sniffles,
sense.
Things like that. Little colds, which could be, you know, COVID. It could be, absolutely, it could be COVID. But it wasn't a super spreader event by any stretch. And that made me feel really good. You know, I'm happy that I took the precaution, a little bit of insurance for me just to make sure that I wouldn't get sick. But I'm really grateful that nobody else got sick. It sucks going to an event and having such a great time and then coming home and hating life for a week, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So, that's about it. That was bitter cold.
Shenanigans.
That's all we did.
So I'm very excited about what you're about to tell us.
Yeah.
Guy had sent me a little sneak peek, and yeah. Even before then, so you've sent me a couple of spy shots, and I got to molest one of your samples at Grinsgiving, and I'm very, very, very excited for it. I think it's just going to be. I don't know how many samples you've went through since Grinsgiving. I think at least three.
Yep.
And I can't imagine how much better it's going to be. And I'm very excited to see the soul plate when it comes out. And I'm getting ahead. Let me let you give us a little bit more of what's going on with this.
Yeah. So we have been through a lot of samples. So we announced our boot company. Didn't share the boot as much as just shared the brand that we're actually doing the thing. So the brand is called Standard. And Standard is a term that came from us talking about why we wanted to make a boot and what was going to be different about our boot. And the premise behind Standard is that I've skated every skate on the market. And I know what I like. I know what I don't like. And there are things on skates that aren't on all skates. You know, like maybe they have a good sole plate. Maybe they have a flat heel with an internal shock absorber. Maybe they have good quality wheels. Maybe they have a buckle that doesn't break in an hour. Like there are a lot of things out there that really should be standard on all skates. So we are going to make a skate that is the standard. That if you looked at different skates and you said, well, these are things that every skate should have, this is the skate that every skate should have. So it has all of the features that I've found on all the other skates that I said, it's crazy that this skate doesn't have this. Like the one thing that this skate is lacking is that it doesn't have this. Well, let's make sure that our skate has that. So there's a punch list of 20 or so things that we made sure that we addressed on the skate. And I won't go through all of those tonight, but that's the premise behind Standard, that we wanted to make sure that everything that's good on skates was a standard on our skate. And the brand is a very... So Stefan did all of the design. The brand is a very stylized... It's hard to put into words, but it is not a specific style. It is a style for everybody. We want to make sure that this doesn't just speak to hipsters, doesn't just speak to hypebeast, doesn't just speak to, you know, you enter your name. You know the brands that I'm talking about without naming them.
For sure.
This should be for everybody because, you know, I'm a 46-year-old dude. I can skate them. And I think everybody out there who's listening to this can skate them and should feel like this brand can speak to them. Like, this is a brand that I don't feel weird skating. You know, there are some brands out there that I just don't fit in with. And I want to make sure that our brand, anybody can fit into it. We will have signature skates that maybe you can't skate because maybe they're more towards that pro rider. But the baseline of the brand should be that anybody who's out there can skate them and feel like these skates are the skates for them. That's something that was really difficult to do. And I think Stefan just completely knocked it out of the park. You know, he did an amazing job with our designs. If you go to the Instagram, it's Standard Skate Co. On Instagram, or standardskate.co if you want to go on the web. The design is just this clean, like very 50s sci-fi vibe right now. It will continue to evolve, but we're going to keep it with a very clean, stylized version of what we think Standard should be. And that's something that I don't think has been done very often in the industry. We tend to speak, and I'm as guilty of it as anybody in 50-50, but we tend to speak to the features of the skates instead of like just a thing about skating, like just a thing about, I don't know, a brand. Most brands use the word skate in them. Yep. Or they have a picture of a skate. And it's like, we don't really want to do that. Like, you should be able to be into this, and you don't have to declare to everybody that you're a rollerblader. Like, you should just want to wear these because they're cool shirts. Or, you know, when we do soft goods, like, this is going to be a nice hat that you could just wear. And it's just like good, like, it's clothes. It's like, these are skates that just everybody should be able to get away with.
Makes sense.
So that was what we wanted to convey over the weekend. So we had posters made up, and Stefan ran around on Thursday and put them up everywhere. So they were posters that you know, showed kind of what the brand was all about. You could see these posters on the Instagram. You could see the photos of the poster, the designs of the posters we put on the Instagram as posts. They were just put up all around the park, and it was really, really cool to come in and see them just set up everywhere. I mean, that's different. I also made postcards. So been mailing out postcards to people who, you know, I have their mailing from previous orders, and just sending them a sticker and a postcard so that they are aware of a brand. You know, the brand, launching a brand is hard.
I'm sure.
And we're still months out from actual skates. So having a brand without a skate, without a tangible product that people can buy, is even harder. We're making the best that we can. And I think getting the name Standard out there so that people know what to expect and know what the vibe of the brand is going to be, I think was really the goal of this weekend. I think we did a good job of that. We did bring the skate. So we had the size 42. We've started the molds for the 42. So we've got the sole plates, the cuffs, the boot, the frame. Those are all in production now. So they're being made, not production, but they are producing the molds.
Okay.
They're being made so that we can start having the samples. And they started those a few weeks ago. So we should have those end of March. Usually takes about 30 to 45 days for the molds to be finished. So end of March, beginning of April is when we expect that we'll have actual skatable samples of the size 42. And we had a 3D printed version of that at the booth. But we put it behind a box, and we put tint on the box so that you couldn't see it. And the reason for that, we wanted to have a way that we could show that we were actually doing something. But because it's a 3D printed skate, it looks like a 3D printed skate. You know, you could see mold line, the lines and everything. I wanted a way that we could show the skate without actually showing the skate. So people could see it, they could take pictures of it, they could look at it, and there were people like, you know, staring at it like a fishbowl. And it was awesome, and they were asking questions, and, you know, I was answering as many questions as I could, but they were able to see that we're actually working on something. And then I could tell them, yeah, it's in production now. Like, we'll have the molds ready next month. It's just a little early, all that stuff. I felt really good about that. You know, not only does the 3D printed skate look great, it really, I mean, it's a very unique look on the market. You'll see a lot of hints from different skates. You know, I had a lot of people say, oh, it looks like a them, or it looks like a sway, or it looks like a blank. And it's like, yeah, it looks like a skate. Like, we're not going to reinvent what the skate looks like, but we're going to make a skate that fits with everybody's style. And this, you know, the aesthetics of it, the lines of it, the design of it, it is a very minimal skate that will not go out of its way to be flashy, to be, you know, shiny or anything that has way too many lines or way too much, like, treatment or anything. Very clean lines, minimal design, utilitarian, it'll get the job done. But with a really unique look to it. That I don't think anybody, I know a lot of skates. I think this is a very unique look on the market that we're going to be able to bring it out.
From what I'm seeing, I'm excited about it. I never got the, you know, people have told me like, it looks like a them, it looks like a Mesmer. Mm-hmm. And to me, it kind of makes sense. I had someone reach out and say, hey, like, what's going on with this? Why is Law doing it this way? It's like, well, as you know, Law has tried a bunch of different skates, mm-hmm. and he's trying to take different things that he's liked about, you know, this skate, you know, with stuff that he didn't like about this one. He's trying to come up with the best skate possible for as many feet as possible.
Right,
so the more good things that he can have in this skate and the less bad things he can have in skate, the more people can skate it. So,
right. I don't get me wrong. It's an amazing looking skate, but
yeah, I'm excited.
It's going to look like a skate. Like I think we're past the point where anything new is going to come out that's going to blow your mind. That it's like, what the hell is that?
Yeah. It's all going to look like a rollerblade.
Exactly. And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Adapt definitely brings out skates that you're like, what the hell is that? That's not my market. You know, I want to make a skate that's for everybody. And if you want to do that, it needs to be a plastic skate. It needs to look like a rollerblade.
Yeah.
Not brand, but like inline skate.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a punch list of things that every skate needs to have. It's going to have those things. And they're going to be well thought out. Like the sole plate, the cuff bolts, the mounting plates, the anti-rocker wheels, like everything that we've done is well thought out because there are skates out there that do it really well, and they should be standard on all skates. That's the whole point of this skate. So I think it's going to be a really interesting time when I can bring the skate out and actually hold it and say, here, hold it.
Yeah.
For people to touch. That time is probably going to be in April, when we're at the Crowder Cup and when we're at Blading Cup. Those are the two next events that we're going to be going to. I will do everything that I can to have skates there. They won't be for sale yet, but we'll be able to hold them. We'll probably put them on sale shortly after. We need to test them. We need to make sure that, you know, what we're making is the right thing. But I want people to be able to see them, hold them, get to know what the skates are all about and why I think they're a unique design on the market. I wish that I had those for Bittercold, but you know, molds take a long time. China takes a long time.
Yep.
They should be ready in April, and I should have them for those two events. So if you are in the West Coast, come on out to Blading Cup, Spring Cup. If you're on the East Coast, come on down to Crowder Cup here in Raleigh, and I'll do everything that I can so that I got them.
If you're in Iowa, we're sorry.
I'm sorry you missed it. Bittercold was your terrible. Best bet, and it didn't happen.
Yeah. I mean, I've said it 100 times, but I'm very, very excited for it. I think you have a lot of really good ideas, and I think the experience with a bunch of different boots and you know what you want, and you know, I think you have a good grasp on what the general population would want with one of these skates. And I think you're going to do a good job. I think you're going to hit it out of the park. At the very least, as far as the functionality of the fit is concerned, there's always going to be haters as far as aesthetics are concerned. But that's secondary when you're coming into aggressive type stuff. So it is still something that's important, but I think the more important part is how the skate's going to perform.
Yeah.
Professional opinion.
I totally agree. I think that people are going to be really pleased with how they look. I think that they will have, you know, I sweat the details on all the different angles. You know, we designed this, and I've been staring at the three models, and I've gone through four revisions of it to get the fit right. Making sure that the look down is clean, super important to me. Making sure that there's material in some places to make it stiffer and some places to make it flexier, super important to me. Making sure that sole plates don't look like they're a lunch tray that you just, you know, screwed onto the bottom of your skate, super important. Like, it needs to have a really clean aesthetic, and I think we've really succeeded with that. The whole suite should be ready in April for first testing. The size 42 is in, you know, development now. I just started a print on our first size 40, so we're going to try testing that out. There will be 4 shell breaks at launch, the 40, the 42, the 46, and the 40, 44 and 46. We'll have a dual fit liner, so you should bring your own liner if you're passionate about your liner, but if you want, our liners are going to be great. They're not going to be Intuitions, but they're going to be good stock liners. And bring your own frames if you want. Again, our frames are going to be great, but you know, we'll sell them boot only, we'll sell them shell only. However you want, so that you can skate them however you like. I think it's going to be, we're not bringing in a ton. After showing them to a few shops and showing them to a few skaters, I have a feeling that this first order is going to sell very quickly. I hope that everybody is happy with them so that we can get some good word of mouth so that the next order sells as quickly. But you know, ultimately I'd love to keep skates in stock. I'd love to do 2 runs a year. You know, this isn't something that I think we're ever going to be a huge power slide them like level of production.
Yeah.
This is going to be something that I'm going to be able to keep in because I want to make sure that we have a skate available, and I love putting my money where my mouth is. You know, years and years and years of me reviewing skates, saying what I like, what I don't like. It's really easy for me to say that from the sidelines, but now I'm investing lots of money into this project, and I have that credibility that, hey, I'm doing it. Like, this is important to me that we have a skate that fits these different criteria on the market, and I'm the only one that has this opinion, this specific opinion. I think this is the best skate that you can buy, and I'm going to make it.
That's awesome. I can't wait.
Yep. It's going to be fun.
Yep. It's going to be a great skate.